The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1133. It is the 3rd of August 2018. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Clifford Gross, Chairman and CEO of Tech Capital. And Cliff discusses their portfolio companies, Lucid, which has launched an e-store to provide smart glasses, and the appointment of Victor Manzanilla, the CEO of Solarius. Plus, I also have on Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: Xar, that's X-A-R, Nichols, N-I-C-L, and Avesoro, A-S-O. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Brave Bison, BBSN, Apollo Minerals, which is listed on the ASX, Prairie Mining, PDZ, and Bilby, B-I-L-B. And as always, are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Clifford Gross, Chairman and CEO of Tech Capital. That's T-E-K. Cliff, thanks for coming on the podcast again.
Oh, nice to be here. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. And it's very hot over here, but I guess you're always hot where you are, but you're keeping busy anyway. You've had a couple of launches out in 2 days, and we'll go into those in a bit, Cliff. Before we do, for people listening for the first time or are not quite familiar with the company, how would you summarize Tech Capital?
Yeah, Tech Capital is a technology transfer company that provides tech transfer services to universities and companies around the world to help them create market value from new discoveries. And in addition to that, we also selectively acquire intellectual properties from these institutions for our own portfolio companies. Mm-hmm. In the last 3 years, we've acquired just over 60 properties, and we've established 9 portfolio companies. And 3 of these portfolio companies, Belloscura, Solarius, and Lucid, are showing really interesting, strong progress. And so we're very excited about the direction of the business. The services are growing, and our portfolio company value from the last financial report is also growing. So that's what Tech Capital does. We create market value from university discoveries.
Excellent stuff. Well, news is concerning 2 of those portfolio companies just mentioned. Let's go back yesterday. Solarius appointed a new CEO, and take us through the details. Just give us a background into what Solarius is, and also you can chat about Victor, who's the appointment, if you could.
Sure. Solarius, which is Latin for salt, is a portfolio company that we established to commercialize a new proprietary salt manufacturing technology. Solarius's technology, it's an issued patent, allows you to make salt crystals that are roughly 100 times smaller than traditional table salt. And the advantage of doing that is when you have these very small crystals, they dissolve rapidly on your tongue, and they produce a larger sensation of saltiness in the brain using less salt. So you can get all of the flavor with roughly half of the sodium. And as you know, reducing sodium is critically important for reducing high blood pressure and the preponderance of heart attacks and strokes in the population. In fact, the US FDA said by going from 3,400 milligrams a day salt consumption, which is the average salt consumption of an American, to 2,300 milligrams a day, which is just around a teaspoon of salt, around 25,000 to 50,000 lives would be saved each year in the United States alone. So reducing your sodium consumption is not just a nice thing to do, it's vitally important because cardiovascular disease is the number one killer in the population. So Solarius has an exclusive patent that allows you to produce these very small salt crystals. They've been tested on crisps using traditional salt and the Solaris salt, and the results independently produced were they taste the same, but they have around half, 55% less sodium.
straight away I'm a buyer of that product because I love salt. And I'm thinking, and I know very much, straight away I know I put too much salt on. I always know that. I know that so well. And I thought, why is it so good but so bad for me? So I can see the potential there, huge potential. And of course, we're all, I think, getting more, especially a certain demographic, getting more health conscious, more aware of our health and trying to improve it in some way. So take us through the appointment, because he's quite a big hitter, isn't he?
Yeah, we're extremely grateful for this new hire. Victor Manzanilla is the CEO that we've just appointed to Solaris, and he's had a terrific career. He was marketing director for Office Depot, which is a chain of about 1,400 stores throughout North America. And he was a marketing manager. He had a 12-year career at Procter & Gamble, where he was a brand manager for global new business development and the marketing manager for a number of different products. And so he's managed billion-dollar brands, and he's really extraordinarily capable. And so we think we have the right man for the job to scale up Solaris and bring this new low-sodium salt product into the marketplace to both save lives and create value for our shareholders. So we're very excited about it.
But he also must be impressed with you. So you're not only impressed with him, because, like I said, his company has bought sort of $50,000 worth of shares, hasn't he?
Yeah. He also decided, after we discussed his potential onboarding, he said he would like to purchase some equity in Solaris, which he did. He bought 2.5% of the company, concomitant with his onboarding. So we're very glad that he did, because we want him to have all the incentive in the world to build a major brand around Solaris.
And so where is that? I mean, Solaris, is it, where is it in its commerciality at this stage? Is it there, available in shops?
No, it's okay. Not. It's not. It hasn't been sold yet. The product has been manufactured. We manufactured 50 pounds of it, primarily for testing at independent research labs and for sodium analysis. And so now we've developed a business plan, and of course, Victor will weigh in on that plan and assemble his team and figure out the most effective go-to-market strategy for Solaris. So it's pre-commercialization, but post R&D. It's a fully developed product.
Excellent stuff. Okay.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah. It actually could make a dent, in our opinion, in terms of world health. And it's a huge marketing opportunity, and so we have a very capable marketing senior executive at the helm, which we think is the right man for the job, as I mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's very exciting, and obviously news to come on that. So moving to today's news, which is also quite exciting, you have launched your e-shop, and it's an eye-like Lucid, it's called, of course, and it's quite unique, isn't it? I think, I mean, obviously people launch e-shops all the time, but not this type. So take us through exactly what it's all about, please, Cliff.
Sure. Well, Lucid is a relatively new company. We established it in September of 2017, so it's less than a year old. We conducted a token generation event, and we raised $6 million to fund the development of the company. And the company's goal is to make, it's basically to upgrade your eyewear, is to take eyewear and add technology to it to enhance the visual experience. And the platform for doing this is glasses, and making proper glasses first and foremost. And so we've launched an e-shop to provide proper glasses. And then on top of those glasses, we're offering some unique technological features that aren't available elsewhere. So it's really exciting. And then ultimately, the e-shop will have sort of advanced augmented reality features that you can also get with the glasses. But initially, there are traditional sort of high fashion glasses. Plus, there's also something called Lucid Loud, which is the first audio glasses. They're bone conducting speakers, and there's a microphone built into the frame of the glasses. And so you can answer your phone, you can play music, you can speak with Siri or any of the other AI interfaces, all with a pair of proper prescription glasses, with single or progressive lenses, with photochromic lenses or sunglasses if you wish, etc. And so Lucid is offering this product now, which is a first. Additionally, we have a licensed optometrist, so if any of our customers or visitors to the site have any questions about eye care or eye health, they can ask a licensed optometrist those questions. We have a loyalty program. We have very rapid shipping. And we have a virtual try-on app that allows you to try on the glasses and actually move your head around and the glasses track on your head so you can see what they look like from the side as well as from the front before you purchase them. And then the other thing that's really unique is that Lucid's eShop is the first online optic store in the world that actually accepts, in addition to traditional currency, actually accepts cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum for purchases if the customers wish to pay in those currencies. So we're very excited about the eShop, and today is its maiden voyage.
Yeah, that is very exciting. Absolutely. And it's got so many things going on. It's so cutting edge, isn't it? It's got, the, as I said, you can listen to music. It's got Bluetooth. You can use cryptocurrency to purchase them. It's online. It's very cutting edge there. And so what's the next bit you've launched now? What is the next sort of big milestone you're hoping to achieve with that then, Cliff?
Well, we're hoping to get to a really good sales level. And we're providing, we're starting a very aggressive marketing program for the Lucid eShop. And we're continuing with the development of augmented reality spectacles, which we hope will be added to the eShop in the first half of 2019. So we think Lucid is a durable business model. It's progressed extraordinarily rapidly, you know, in roughly 9 months' time. It went from a concept on a clean piece of paper to a functioning business. And we're very excited about its performance. And it's really achieved quite a lot in a short period of time. But equally so, Solaris is tremendous potential. And let's not forget Belscura, which is another portfolio company that we started around 2 years ago from a clean sheet of paper. That has three products that it's selling in the U.S. and Europe. Has two products in advanced development, including what's probably the world's smallest and lightest portable oxygen concentrator, which also has replaceable cartridge filters, so you don't have to get a new device as the disease progresses. You can just get a new replaceable cartridge. And that's, we think, a world-beater product that's being submitted for 510K review by the FDA this year. So we have three of our portfolio companies that are showing very advanced signs of life. They're kicking and screaming and coming out, and any one of them could be worth a multiple of our current market cap.
Yeah, which is sub £5 million. Like I said, people, let me just describe those products we've had now, and then we talk about the evaluation. Probably think, really? So, yeah, it's quite a big surprise. So, okay, Cliff, three reasons then. Someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not following the company as yet. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, the major reason is that we're, for the amount of value that we're delivering in terms of our portfolio companies and the revenues that we're generating from our service business, is we believe we are truly undervalued. So very good, it's a very good buying opportunity. But more specifically, in terms of the engine room, we've built the world's largest network of university research centers, and we capture from this network, it's about 4,500 institutions, the IP that's available for sale or license from these institutions. So it's the world's idea factory that we have, you know, our finger on the pulse of. And then we have 60 scientists that are able to screen these properties and help select the wheat from the chaff. And we built a technology transfer service business around this that's growing at about 25% year over year, and which is, you know, really an interesting business. It keeps us close to our technology suppliers, and it also keeps the lights on, or helps to keep the lights on. And then we have a very capable management team. And in the last 3 years, we've acquired a strong portfolio of 61 intellectual properties across 11 across nine portfolio companies. And three of those companies, as I've mentioned, Belscura, Lucid, and Solaris, are really showing good signs of development. So these reasons, I think, make it a very compelling opportunity to certainly look at the company and follow it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cliff, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, Justin. You be well.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you? Keeping
yes.
cool, I hope.
Yeah, well, it's impossible, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
exactly. And yet us lot, me and you, well, not together, obviously, but we went out sneaking in more sun abroad as if it was
yes.
needed. You know, so I went to Turkey, you went to Crete, like I said, we had a couple
yeah.
of days of 40 degrees, which is
yeah,
too
we
much.
Got a couple of days at 40 as well. That was very, very toasty.
Yeah,
luckily,
yeah.
the bay was cold and the pool was nearby, but nevertheless, it was a bit hot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at temperatures next week. They are cooling down. It's Monday, Tuesday, 30-31, but then it goes to 25, 22 Thursday, Friday next week is down to like it's freezing. It's like 22.
Well, it's perfectly civilized when we're trotting around in
yeah.
when I'm trotting around in a shirt and a tie and a jacket as I usually do. So
yeah, yeah. But as far out as the BBC is doing the weather forecast,
no
rain. It's looking good. Yeah, it's,
yeah
I mean,
yeah,
that's a couple
no
of weeks.
Rain. I'm glad I'm not a farmer. That's all I can
yeah.
say.
Well, going from one environment to another, let's look at the global mm. environment. I mean, there's lots of things happening in the moment. I see pressures from all,
yep.
but the market seems to be holding very well. I'm just wondering, is it on the edge of a buckle? Because we've got,
yeah.
Of course, in the background, Trump and the trade war and the Chinese there. We just had interest rates go up by, well, it's 50%, but it's still
yeah.
historically low, 0.75%.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Brexit, of course, in the background going on there. So we've got all these kind of pressures there.
Mm.
What's your thoughts, right? Is it affecting businesses or what's going on here?
I think businesses are definitely having to contingency plan. I mean, there was that story in the Wall Street Journal this week about the French drug company Sanofi's been stockpiling pills in the UK. That's about 4% of its global sales. It's a big provider of insulin, and it has been taking contingencies. And that's what well-run businesses do. You just plan for all possible options. So I think businesses are having to spend a lot of time on it. Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, said he's spending 50% of his time right now Brexit contingency planning. So in that respect, you would think it is having a bit of an impact. And if you are a bit unclear as to what's happening, you know, you probably will hold off on making that big investment or making that big hire, possibly. Equally, there are clearly lots of people out there. You know, Tim Martin at Wetherspoon is a fantastic example who thinks that Brexit's going to be absolutely brilliant for the UK. He's switching the products that he's selling, so they're British only, because he thinks that's going to be providing more value for his customers. So not everybody's down in the dumps in it. And to be fair, of those who voted on the day, 52% thought it was a good thing to leave, 48% didn't. So on balance, you wouldn't think that it would affect consumer confidence. If anything, it would help it, because people want this to happen. Mm-hmm. I guess what's probably got people a bit confused is the people in charge can't really agree as to what it's going to look like and how they're going to implement it. I think that is casting a bit of a cloud. But Brexit, it's not helping. And I think what it means is that with the pound remaining under pressure, investors have tended to look towards those overseas players, those dollar earners, those exporters. And I think I saw a piece of research from, it might have been Absolute Strategy Research, my former colleague Ian Harnett from my UBS days. Lovely guy, very smart guy, and his business partners, they were saying that the gap between exporters and domestic players in terms of earnings is now at a historic very high level. So you're sort of paying on their numbers an 18 times PE average for export and overseas type players, and a 12 times earnings multiple for domestic players like Marks and Sparks, the retailers, those that really just rely on the UK economy. So value hunters, I'm sure they'll be thinking, look, we've got to look at these downtrodden, ignored, unloved UK names. Equally, if you're worried about Brexit, you probably are worried about sterling. You probably still are going to want to stick with those overseas players. So it's not a clear picture, and it isn't helping. The UK, since the vote in June of 2 years ago, I think the FTSE All Shares up 15-20%, but it's still basically the second worst major geographic performer, only beating, I think, Latin America. So, you know, Japan, America, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Asia, Africa, Middle East have all outperformed the UK. So I think it is having some impact on sentiment, if nothing else, very definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, would you say, obviously we don't know what's ahead, but would you say, you know, if everything goes okay, if the worry is eased a bit, then the FTSE's do a jump, or the caps do a jump there?
I think it would be difficult to say the whole market's going to go bananas, because if the exporters and the dollar earners start to do less well, they're a huge part of the index, and the domestic players tend to be a bit smaller. I think you just see a change in leadership.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, isn't it, for this? I mean, it's obviously a play. Trump, we know Trump's game now, what he does. You know, he goes on Twitter, hammers someone, threatens everything, you know, threatens almost close to World War III. And then, and it, obviously, it's just basically, negotiating, isn't it? But he's still playing it to hardball with China, isn't he,
Yeah, I mean, in the end, if you look at the US trade deficit, China's more than half of it. So in the end, they're guys and girls that he's really trying to get at. I know he's backed off a little bit on Europe now. He's offered some exemptions to Canada and Mexico, though he's still not a big fan of NAFTA, as we know. But it's China that he's really after, because that is the biggest percentage of the US trade deficit by miles. So, and he's clearly not going to stop. I'm not sure that this is a game where you're going to get winners and losers, even though the president is convinced he will. And the Chinese are already retaliating in their own way. They're putting on their tariffs of their own. They've let the renminbi go down to 6.95 against 6.9 against the dollar, I think. Remember, three summers ago, when it got to 6.5, the financial markets fell out of bed, frightened that China was going to sort of export deflation and all around the world. And they are, to some degree, making life harder for American companies, not buying microchips. They've mentioned Apple in the press overnight in the States, which is interesting timing, giving all the hoopla about Apple's market capitalization. So this is by no means a clear-cut situation. And again, the fears that people will have, if you slap a tariff on something, it makes it more expensive, so it's potentially inflationary. It potentially kills off trade. It potentially, if it's inflationary, drives up interest rates. And if US interest rates go up, then it could drive up the dollar. And all of those things, historically, aren't brilliant news for stock markets. So that's why when you get tough talk on trade, markets wobble. When they think that the president's being a little bit more emollient, that's when markets start to rally. It's very hard to if you really end up with the trade war, it's very hard to see how that can help equities, particularly when a lot of markets are trading near all-time highs. China is clearly affected by it. It's basically down by a fifth from its high now, so it's back towards sort of bear market territory, and it's at 40%. It's 40% below where it peaked in 2015. So they're certainly paying attention, even if the US stock seems to be responding a little bit more like, well, we're going to be in the winning camp.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, winning camp is I suppose relative. If everyone suffers, then it's a problem.
I suppose so. But you've got lots of US companies who are already talking about increased input costs. So they're having to put up prices, which will be interesting. You've also got some companies who, like Harley Davidson, is saying that they're losing business, and some of the bourbon makers, Jack Daniels and Jim Beam. China's clamping down on that. So not everybody's going to be pleased. The steel companies are delighted. They're reporting fantastic profits because they're no longer having to face lower-priced Chinese competition. But that's not great if you're a U.S. house builder or a U.S. construction company, because your steel costs have just gone up. So, again, it isn't win-win-win-win-win all the way down the line.
Yeah. But I noticed that Trump is offering sort of subsidies and help to farmers. So it's affecting the very people who sort of got him into office, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, he's got. I mean, in the end, again, the Chinese have already said they're going to massively cut down on China on American soybean imports. So, he's got to do something, because people who are core supporters are being hurt by this. So, not everybody is going to win. So, it's very careful. I know that Wilbur Ross said yesterday this has all been thought through, and I'm sure they've got very clear plans for what they're trying to achieve. But it's just, the history books say nobody wins a trade war in the end. So we will find out.
Yeah, exactly. Marv, so is it time to look at gold stocks, do you think?
I'm going to talk about Avasoro for precisely that reason in a minute, because there's no news on the company, but I do want to talk about gold. We can either do that now or do that later.
Well, let me ask you one question before we get into that. Yesterday, right, I hold some stock in BT, and yesterday it was down. They announced the interest rate hike, and it went up into positive territory. I don't know if this was coincidence, not in no way connected. But would you think it is connected in some way?
I think the slightly tortuous logic there is as follows, which is UK interest rates go up. That means that UK government bond yields or gilt yields will go up. And that is very good news if you have a pension deficit. Because if you have a pension fund, a lot of it's going to be in UK government gilts just for the security. And so the higher the yield you're getting on them, the easier it is for you to meet your pension liabilities. So I suspect that if you do see interest rates go up and bond yields go up to a degree, those stocks that have got whacking great pension deficits, like BT, I'm guessing from the top of my head, International Consolidated Airlines through British Airways. I think there's one or two others out there as well. They're, funnily enough, if government bond yields go up, that will actually provide them with some assistance. So that is my best guess as to why BT went up yesterday when interest rates went up. In addition, BT share price has been an absolute horror. And it actually, after the ejection from office of Gavin Patterson, poor chap, you know, the share prices rallied from about £2 to £2.30 quite quickly. I think you are seeing a lot of value hunters sniffing around that one. On the view that the CEO's gone. There's an awful lot of bad news in the share price. There's been a pension settlement.
Agreement with Ofcom. Listen, the chairman piling about £250,000 at £2 worth.
I think deep value hunter. I know that M&G Recovery Fund, run by Tom DeBell, has been buying BT. He was early, but then value fans by their nature always are. I think people who are deep value contrarians, it's definitely a stock on their radar right now. Yeah.
Well, do you know what? Big stocks really do sort of, you get a lot of algos obviously in there and stuff, and the big stocks sort of really conform to technical analysis. And you look at BT, it hasn't closed above that 200-day moving average in 2 years. And it's just about, they're 230 at the moment. That 200-day moving average is 238.
So it has bounced.
If it gets above that, I'd say the fact it hasn't done it in 2 years, probability suggests it could go higher, you know, because a lot of people trade on that just the 200-day moving average.
They will
do.
Yep. So, they will do for
definitely. Okay. Let's get into stocks on your list there then, Russ.
So the three for today is that the one that we've not looked at before, which is Czar, and then two that we have, Nichols and Avasoro Resources. But Avasoro is more a look at gold because there's not been a fat lot of amount of news on the stock per se. But we looked at it a few weeks ago because there was some good news from some of its West African mines. But I just want to look at gold in particular.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Czar, what's the ticker there?
XAR. XAR. It's a FTSE small cap company based in Cambridge. Market caps just under £200 million, and it's kind of caught my eye because the shares are trading at basically a 5-year low. So it's not one for momentum jockeys by any stretch of the imagination. The shares were knocking nearly £11.50 5 years ago, and the reason I'm looking at it is it's actually dished out a big profit warning in May,
that's what's
knocked the stock down. Now, it's a global leader in digital inkjet printing systems.
Yep.
So it does inkjet printheads, it does 3D printing, it does ink systems and ink flow systems, and its products are used in 3D printing, textiles, packaging, ceramics, anything where you can have a pretty pattern and a complex pattern printed straight onto the materials, not onto a piece of paper that's then stuck on. Mm-hmm. Customers can customize these things for volume, for speed, for color, for flow, and it's a global player. Half of its business is in Asia, a fifth is in the US, very little in the UK. Now, revenues actually peaked in 2013 at £137 million. They're due to be about 98 this year. Operating profit peaked at nearly £40 million. It's probably due to be about 10 this year. But if you look at the company's past history, it's not a cyclical business in the sense of the economy. It's a cyclical business in terms of its product cycles. And that 2013 peak was driven by ceramics and tiles and laminate demand from China. That's kind of gone quiet. It's now looking to sort of move into new markets, which it's doing slowly under a new CEO. It's looking to develop new products like thin film. And all it takes is a cycle like 2006-07 and 2011-13, when a new product cycle runs and operating margins will go from 10% where they are now to nearly 30%. So if, and I admit this is a big if, you get a cycle like that, this is a stock that is ludicrously cheap. Now, the risk that you've got clearly is we've had one profit warning. They can obviously come in bunches. So there's by no means a guarantee that you're not going to get another warning later on this year or even one after that. But if you're patient and contrarian, there's £45 million of net cash on the balance sheet. It pays in a 4% dividend yield. You can kind of hunker down. But I admit, if you're risk averse, you're probably going to look away and maybe wait for the second or third warning. If you're prepared to be patient, you know, maybe start moving instead. I mean, the chart looks ugly because it's just at the moment pointing one way. So.
Yeah, I've gone from BT chart, which I thought was ugly, to this, and this is uglier. But do you know what, though? This 215 level, 218, 220, where it bounced recently, you go back to 2015, it bounced majorly from then. It didn't come, and it literally from 2015, no, 2014, everything, and it went up from that, and it hasn't, you know, it literally rallied for like 2-3 years. So it'll be interesting to see if this holds at 250, 220.
I mean, it's at 255 now, so that's quite a way down from where it is. So again, you might want to be patient. I mean, the interims are the 5th of September. You might want to hang around until then and see what they say.
Yeah, but again, like I said, if you look at the technicals and that use that 200-day moving average line, that's at 350, and that's still coming down quite sharply. It's not flattening. BT is flattening out a little bit. So you can see that it may bounce for a couple of months yet, you know.
I don't think it's going anywhere in a hurry. I think that is absolutely fair. But it's just such a strong technology company with a net cash balance sheet, a dividend yield. it's not impossible. It might even get bought by somebody. Some say its technology is that good. So let's see what happens.
Cool. Excellent. What's next? When you said Czar, I didn't know them. I just slipped my mind there. And I think I may have invested in those a couple of years ago. But yeah. There we go. What's next, Russ?
Nickels, another chart that, yeah. Every time we mention it, you sort of suck your teeth and click your tongue and sort of raise your eyeballs. Because the chart there is pretty ugly as well. I mean, we looked at it in February. The shares have since gone from £15 to £14.15, and it's just kind of bobbling sideways. Soft drinks maker based in Newton Le Willows makes Vimto, Feel Good, Sunkist, and it's been a stock that's just been derated. The shares have gone from £20 to £14 after basically problems in the Middle East, Yemen in particular, and also worries over the sugar tax. Now, the sugar tax has not affected the business at all. You've obviously now got worries over the CO, the carbon dioxide shortage, which don't seem to have knocked the business off track. But the Middle East is still causing them an inconvenience. And the half-year results in July, no worse than expected, no better than expected, which after the profit warning late last year is a start. Sales up 2, operating profit up 3, earnings per share up 4, dividend up 12. Thank you very much, because this is a net cash business with operating margins of more than 20%. It outperformed in the UK, but overseas sales went from 16 to 11 million quid. Which shows you how big a deal the Yemen situation is. And the African business was a little bit down as well. They're planning on, they're hoping for a better second half from Africa. So let's see. You're paying high teens earnings, multiples, for sort of low, mid-single digit earnings. So it's not a bargain, but the dividend yield is fine. It's a solid, well-run company. It probably is just genuinely going to bobble along for some time until, if and when, the African and Middle Eastern situation sort themselves out. But, you're not getting a lot of inspiration from the charts, but at least for the moment, things have stopped going wrong. So if you got it, you'd certainly just nurture it and see what happens.
But do you know what? Again, this is sort of bouncing. Again, a very key level here because it's bounced off this level, say 1425, 1450 area, quite a few times. And so if it doesn't hold this, it's going lower.
You'd be tempted to run a stop loss a little bit low, just below 14 quid or something, and 30.75 and see what happens, maybe.
Yeah, okay. What's next, Russ?
And the last one's Avasoro Resources, ASO on AIM. And I'm really going to say it's a gold miner, West Africa. It's made a couple of acquisitions there, I think Burkina Faso, where the initial news has been quite encouraging. But it's more just to talk about gold in general, because gold, as I think you were hinting at the start, nobody's talking about it, and it's basically a one-year low of just over $1,200 an ounce, when a few months ago it looked like it could even break out above $1,350, and that just didn't happen. And I think gold has ebbed because you've had rate rises, you've had the US economy going okay, and you've had the Federal Reserve reining in quantitative easing, and the Europeans and even the Japanese talking about doing that as well. And all of those things, gold negative. So in dollar terms, over the last 6 months, gold's down 9%, it's down by 4% over a year, and it's down by 7% over 5 years. So it's firmly in the freezer at the moment. Yeah. And that naturally makes me really, really interested, because nobody's talking about it. And one thing that just caught my eye, Vanguard. No fools there. Massive fund house have just dropped precious metals from their Global Precious Metals and Mining Fund, which they've now renamed the Global Capital Cycles Fund. They've taken the percentage of mining stocks from 80 to 25% in the fund, with no precious metals at all. Now, somebody pointed out kindly to me, that a former US colleague, that the last time Vanguard changed the name of this fund, it was when they dropped gold from it in 2001, just before the metals price bottomed.
Ah, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, is there any? Am I talking rubbish here? But with this trade, it wouldn't be a first.
That's two of us, mate.
Yeah. But is it, like you said? When companies are going to trade wars, like China, devalue the currency a little bit and run the world. Will this happen? I know some are putting up their interest rates like we are, but could this happen to get around these trade tariffs, devaluing the currency, therefore, if that's
definitely
going down,
what Chinese are doing, I think, tacitly at the moment. Yeah,
so that's going to help gold, isn't it? I mean, it could do.
I think the real bull case, I mean, in the end, gold does well when people think central banks are losing control. And at the moment, central banks are giving the impression that they're in control. So I think what you would really need to see for gold to go nuts is the central banks backtrack and start cutting their interest rates or even moving QE back up again. And I think that would be a massive trigger for the metal. Equally, just on a technical point of view, you can follow this if you're really keen. I think it's through the Chicago Board of Exchange or the Chicago or the CME website in the States. You can actually look at how many people are long gold and short gold. And right now, the short positions, I think, are at a 10 or 11 year high. well above the high in 2015 when gold bottomed at around $10.50 an ounce. So technically, there's a lot of shorts out there and not many longs. So again, there's no catalyst you can see right now for gold going up. But equally, the bears are already in there and there's no bulls, which again intrigues me no end. And I think gold stocks have been dogs, gold has been dog. But generally speaking, I think the bearish news is well known. The bullish option is kind of being safe, is kind of being kicked into touch and buried at the moment. So again, if you're brave, patient, contrarian, there are always worse things to have a look at than what nobody else is looking at right now.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When everyone is thinking one way, you know, the market doesn't think like you. You've got to, that's why contrarians, sensible, you know, contrarian, so seem to work out, because you people try and second guess the market and they never get it right. And so,
no, the danger is you can be too early, naturally. But
yeah. Cool, marvelous. Thanks for that, Russ. Have a nice weekend.
No trouble. And you?
Yeah, we'll catch up next week.
I look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're all right, Al?
Hello, Joss. I'm fine. How are you, mate?
Yeah, you just reminded me, it's less than 5 months of Christmas. Really?
I know. My daughter reminded me of this the other day, and it's the sort of thing that daughters do, but
how
you know,
is
it's.
She?
Well, she's my daughter's mid-20s, and she's a big fan of the film Elf. And
me too.
Of course,
honestly, it's one of my favourite films. I love it.
Will Ferrell's brilliant, but of course you get the stuff coming out, all these little things on Facebook, and we saw something the other day. I think it was a few days ago, literally, and it was, hey, it's really exciting. It's 5 months to Christmas with Will Ferrell's face with the elf outfit, looking ecstatic. So yeah, she sent that to me, and there you go.
Oh, wow, all right. Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, let's hope we get a nice, you know, five-month Santa rally. What stocks are we looking at, Al?
I hope so too, mate. Okay. Right, well, firstly, I want to look at a stock whose name fascinates me, and I took a bit of a look at this morning, a company called Brave Bison. Now, Bison's a pretty big bio account, and they're pretty brave anyway, I guess. But Brave Bison, AIM-listed BBSN is the epic code.
Yeah. They
are a company that produce social video. They're capitalized at about 10 million sterling. And the company has today announced a set of half-year results. And the share price has there was quite a sharp recovery in April. Year high of 4.75p, year low of 0.7p. So the company produces social video. It has some 18 social media channels across Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and it's engaging with consumers between the ages of 16 and 34 to do with socially environmentally conscious living. It has a number of commercial agreements with Shell, for instance, that it's a company they work with, and it's the power of social media and social video, as we know, is ever growing, and this company are right at the forefront. Lady by the name of Claire Hungate is CEO, and earlier this year the company offloaded a contract which was whilst it produced revenue, there was virtually no profit margin on there. So they've just declared interim figures today with net revenues of 9.3 million and adjusted EBITDA of 79,000 for the period, which doesn't sound much, but they have offloaded this unprofitable contract during the period. And I think what's particularly impressive is they have a cash balance of 4.2 million on the books, and they have no debt, no overdraft, nothing. So this is a company that's set to grow. Claire Hungate took the company over some 10 months ago, she's pretty bullish about the results today, which show growth and consolidation, and they're in the process of streamlining the business, and clearly they're in a fairly fragmented area and a fast moving area, but nonetheless they are making some strong progress, and there seems to be a lot of broker support for the company too. I'm just looking up some broker forecasts as we speak, but
do you know why I don't understand? I know why they do it, I do understand it really, but it annoys me a little bit. It's in the highlights at the top. Of course they're highlights, but they're not objective highlights, are they? And I just wish companies would be a bit more open, because they highlight the the EBITDA and all that. Why not just tell people the actual financial results as it is, loss before tax and all that stuff, and see how they're doing. Because, I mean, their loss before tax has improved massively. It's 415,000 at the moment. Last year, 2.1 million loss before tax. So, you know, it's almost a quarter of that. So, you know, so they've improved on that. But all I'm saying to anyone, always scroll down. Look at the balance sheet, the income statement, and the balance sheet.
Look at the numbers. Yeah,
look at the cash flow statement. Look at the actual numbers. Don't rely on the highlights, because the highlights are what they want to tell you. It's like when you go and buy a house or go look at a house somewhere and you look at statements online, they only show you the good bits. They don't tell you the bits they don't want to see. You know, so you have to go into the house and look around for that. And so it's almost like do your own due diligence. Look around. I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm not saying the results are bad here. I'm just saying they're making a loss, but that loss is good. It's significantly reduced from last year, but you know, I don't see why people want to highlight stop just in at the top and say this is warts and all. We're not hiding anything, you know. But
No. That's a very sound point, actually. And that's a very good analogy. So, you know, if you're buying a house, obviously you're going to dig down. You don't want to read what the estate agent says, because it's going to be fluff and it's going to extol the virtues anyway. But by the same token, yes, they have no debt. The company is currently loss making, but one of the reasons for that is they had this contract which they weren't making money on, cost a lot of money to service. That's now been offloaded, and the company's in the process of streamlining. So, I think it's one to watch, and clearly this is a growth area. We know social videos are a huge growth area for many companies, and a lot of the big corporates are engaging agencies like Brave Bison now to undertake social video campaigns for them. So clearly it's horses for courses. You may look at this and say, I don't understand it, I can't see how it's going to work, and I can't see a sustainable and growing revenue or a growing area of business in the future, so I won't touch it. But I think there is something to look at here, and clearly they hired somebody from Google recently who's very well regarded, so one to watch, and some potential upside there.
Cool. Models of anything else we'll get?
Yes, touch on Prairie Mining today. PDZ is the epic code. Of course, Prairie Mining, just to remind listeners, is Prairie have ownership of two huge coking coal mines in Poland, and that's known as the Jankarski mine and the Debiensko mine, and clearly, to now, Poland have been a net importer of coal, and they are looking to, or the government administration are looking to regenerate the domestic mining industry to start reproducing their own coal to fire their own power stations going forward. So these are two massive mines which were decommissioned. Jankarski is regarded to be the most advanced coking coal mine and the highest quality coking coal mine in the Northern Hemisphere. But there have been some issues in regard to the Polish Ministry of Environment. There have been Prairie is currently embroiled in a legal dispute with Poland's Ministry of Environment because of its failure to grant Prairie a usufruct agreement at the Jankarski mine. There's ongoing dialogue with the Polish mining giant JSW, who has stated publicly that it may or may not enter an agreement with Prairie Mining, and it will let the markets know by the end of August. So Prairie shares have been pretty static up to this point. Company's currently got a valuation of about 30 million sterling, but the potential size of these projects, if they get back into production, is billions. I mean, it's 3 to 4 billion sterling. The mine life on both Debiensko and Jankarski is pretty strong. So once these come back online, clearly a lot of investment is required. But the company has funding partners in China to enable it to do that. So and Prairie itself is well funded. It has cash reserves currently of 11 million. Australian dollars, and is well placed going forward. But clearly there are these issues to overcome. So this is a key month for the company in that we hope to hear of progress with JSW. And I'm sure if an agreement is in place with JSW, then everything else will fall into place. Certainly in terms of valuation, a note was written by Line Research last year, which conservatively valued the assets and the company at that stage at 118 pence versus the 25, 26 pence it currently sits at today. So clearly, if this agreement with JSW goes ahead, then I think we can expect to see some considerable upside on the books. I will declare here I am a shareholder in Prairie Mining as well.
Okay, all right. Models PDZ. Excellent. Anything else, Al?
Yes, also want to touch on an ASX listed company called Apollo Minerals. Apollo Minerals are ASX listed, but they own and are looking to restart the Salau mine. It's an historical mine for a number of reasons. It was for many years it produced some of the highest grade tungsten anywhere in the world. It was operating in the 70s and 80s, and Apollo now own the mine. They also have ownership of the Oronet project, which on that particular seam, which runs through into northern Spain, they had the ownership of that particular seam and that particular and the operations that are currently plugged into that mine. The company has approval from the French government and the Macron administration to further its exploration, and it's already established there that the grading, the grade of the tungsten in the ground is some 10 times higher than comparable mines currently in operation around the world. And they published an article last week, which there was an article published recently looking at the top 10 tungsten-producing nations in the world. Clearly, China's at the top of that list. France is nowhere on that list at the moment. But if this project is restarted, it will literally propel France onto that list of top 10 tungsten-producing miners. And in terms of the grade, it'll be right at the very top. So France will instantly become one of the top grade tungsten producers in the world. It's not just tungsten, though. There are gold. Gold has been discovered in the mine and the region as well. So as a package, Apollo is a very attractive investment proposition. Currently ASX listed. The executive director Hugo Schumann has said that they are looking at a European listing and possibly a listing in London as well as the project progresses. But well worth a look. If you want to find out more, go to the branduk.website. That's branduk.net and look at the Apollo Minerals page, and you'll find out more information about Apollo and the Kuflins project there.
Yeah, I do like Hugo. I've had him on the podcast with this company, and also used to be at Barclay Energia, and excellent presentation once when I first invested in Barclay, and it was his preciseness and stats and accuracy that it really put it across to me, the project. Cool. All right, anything else, Al?
Finally going to look at a company called Bilby. BILB is the code. And this is a company that was picked out by Vectorvest last week. As you know, I try and sort of discuss a Vectorvest stock pick every week. Vectorvest is a stock analysis and portfolio management platform. And Bilby, you know, I think without Vectorvest has been doing pretty well by itself. In fact, it has a very strong chart, but the company announced last month results for the year ending 31st of March, 61% hike in EBITDA to 6.2 million, and revenues up 23% to just under 80 million. And EPS rose from a 0.4 loss to 8.61 pence per share, and the group also proposed a final dividend. Bilby basically run a series of maintenance and building services, and which they provide the services to local authority housing associations in London and the South East. And it's got four companies under control, and all those companies have service and operational synergies together. But the what particularly caught my attention was the that the VectorVest has a number of metrics, and a series of metrics. What one was the relative value metric was flagged up as early as January 2018, and subsequent dips in the share price in February and April and June also flagged up the earnings growth rate indicators. The indicators are rated between 0 and 2, and the relative value for Bilby, even today, is 1.63, which is exceptionally high, even by VectorVest standards, and a growth earnings growth rate of 40%, which again is exceptionally high. The shares have risen slightly since the recommendation last week. They were 1.26p last week, currently 1.30p. VectorVest has a valuation of 204p, but it's rare, even on the VectorVest scale, to find ratings that high. And with the full set of numbers and the bullish outlook from the chairman going forward, there's a real opportunity on hand here that pays a dividend, but also offers a considerable capital upside at current levels.
Excellent stuff. Yes, strong on the chart, and looking at 160 was last previous high there. So maybe it's a bit of resistance there, but who knows? You know what I'm saying? I mean, do you know what? I look at charts all the time. I never buy or sell without looking at a chart. But I never, ever, I see people, sort of, especially in small caps, just majoring on a chart, and that's all they do.
No.
I think you should never do that. Every day, it hasn't been for a while, she hasn't been on the podcast, but every day, me and Nicola Duke, who's an excellent chartist, look at small caps and charts. Mm. And the amount of times I've seen fundamentals just blow apart a technical setup, unbelievable. So when you get news coming out from a company you don't expect, or it's better than expected, or worse than expected, you can wave goodbye to all those technical indicators that you've put on a chart, you know, measuring this up or measuring that, or Fibonacci. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You've got to. People think it's an easy way to do some investing. You've got to put the hours in. You've got to read about the company as well. Charts are very handy in conjunction with fundamental research, I think.
Exactly. And actually, that's where VectorVest works so well, because it is a combination of all those factors. So if it's if you've got a bullish fundamental picture that matches with a good technical picture too, then I think you can say, well, that's got to be a pretty good prospect. And again, you know, as we know in investing, you know, a share might look poised to jump higher. It might have everything in place to jump higher, and it doesn't do it, you know, for whatever reason. But over the course of time, if those fundamentals hold out, and if the technical picture still continues to look good, it will eventually come good. And certainly, even since the recommendation last week for Bilby, it has broken higher, and it's VectorVest are very sort of bullish going forward that it's broken out of Dr. David Paul said on the technical front, the share's broken northwards through the neckline defining the reversal pattern. So I'm sure Nicola Duke could explain that far better than me, but it has actually broken out of its pattern and looks set to push higher. And I think back with that strong set of fundamentals, for example, if the company announced another contract win in the next few weeks, that could be the catalyst to drive the shares higher to perhaps up to that target price.
Yeah. Cool. Marvellous. Excellent. Al, thanks for that, fella. And that's B-I-L-B, Bilby. And we'll chat next week.
Lovely. Okay, chat next week. Cheers, Jess.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Botswana Diamonds, BOD. At 4, MX Oil, MXO. At 3, Lando Resources, LND. At 2, 7 Digital, 7DIG. And number 1 is Rehoboam Resources, RBD. They're very similar to yesterday, those companies. Maybe people have just followed them. I don't know. Who knows? I'll check up on that. But they're very similar to yesterday's. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Regency Mines, RGM, Mining Equity Trust, starts Virginia Coal Operation. At 4, ECR Minerals, Option Agreement, Iceberg Gold, Project Western Australia. At 3, Sirica Energy, SQZ, purchase of Total's E&P interest in Bruce and Keith Fields. Bruce and Keith. Oh, Bruce, right, Keith. At 2, Zenang Iron Ore, changes to board of directors. And number one, most liked RNS, came from UK Oil and Gas, Portland high rate flow test successfully complete. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.